Indiana's revised revenue forecast projects the state will take in about $290 million more over the next 2 years than previously expected, prompting Governor Mike Pence to renew his call for a 10% income tax cut and giving hope to countless special interests hungry for a post-recession bump in funding. The numbers released this week pretty much guarantee that next week, the final week of the General Assembly's 2013 session, will be the most interesting yet. As any State House veteran will tell you, about the only thing tougher than crafting a state budget when the state's coffers are bone dry is crafting a state budget when the state's revenue stream has started to flow again and long pent-up demands burst forth at every turn. Hi, I'm John Schwanis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll look at how the state's biennial budget is shaping up and what it's likely to mean for you. We'll start, as we always do, with a legislative update from the statehousefile.com, a service of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism.
A new forecast shows the state will have $290 million more to spend through the next budget cycle than lawmakers thought when they started working on the two-year spending plan.
I believe this provides the kind of resources that make us more confident than ever that we can pass a balanced budget that funds our priorities, including increased funding for roads and schools, and provides Hoosiers with the kind of tax relief that they need and deserve.
The governor's tax cut would save Hoosiers, and therefore cost the state budget, more than $500 million a year when implemented. John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute says that could make it tough to fit the tax cut into the budget.
Yes, you could do that, but it would really reorder the priorities of the rest of the budget, and I'm not sure the General Assembly is willing to do that at this point.
The GOP-controlled House didn't include the governor's tax cut in its first version of the budget. The Senate included just a fraction of it, a mere 3% cut. But both of those budgets feature other tax cuts, including a quicker elimination of the inheritance tax than is in state law right now. House Ways and Means Chairman Tim Brown says the goal in the final days of the session will be finding the right mix of tax cuts.
Hoosiers will get tax relief in this budget, and right now the framework is for $500 million of tax relief.
Pence still insists that a 10% cut is what the state needs, but he's acknowledged officials will need to compromise.
I think a mix of income tax relief and inheritance tax relief provides a framework in which we can lay a foundation for real economic growth in our state.
For Indiana lawmakers and the statehousefile.com, I'm Tim Grimes.
Thanks, Tim. Back in a moment with our roundtable discussion. Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Park. Four locations, 200 companies, 4,000 jobs. Purdue Research Park. The idea economy is here.
Lawmakers began the session knowing they had 4 months to come up with a two-year state spending plan. After all, crafting a budget was and is their only true statutory obligation. Knowing the task before them, however, doesn't necessarily make it any easier. Why is it so tough to come up with a budget, even when the single party controls both houses of the General Assembly and the governor's office? Well, I think it's probably safe to say there are close to 30 billion reasons. We'll tackle a few of them with our guests. Republican Representative Tim Brown of Crawfordsville, chairman of the Budget Writing House Ways and Means Committee. Democratic Representative Greg Porter of Indianapolis, the ranking minority member of that committee. Republican Senator Luke Kenley of Noblesville, chairman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, and Democratic Senator Karen Tallien of Portage, the ranking minority member of that panel. Busy week for you all. I appreciate your carving out some time to come and have an unofficial conference committee meeting with us here today. The budget starts in the House Ways and Means Committee, so we'll start with you, Tim Brown. For 4 months now, almost 4 months, we've heard, well, really can't figure out the budget for sure until April 16th. April 16th, that's the mantra we heard over and over again because that's when the state's updated revenue forecast came out. Now that it's here, was it worth the wait?
I think so, because what we needed to know is what was the economic activity in the first quarter for the state of Indiana. You know, I think it very easily with things in D.C. and things outside of our control, it could have been a negative first quarter with sales tax revenue, income tax revenue going down and projected to go down further. We saw that in 209 and 210, so I think that was the point that we needed to add to the rest of this. We do know Hoosiers are crawling out of the recession. but it still is something that is very tenuous, and so we needed to know more information.
In fact, along those lines, there was a companion economic forecast that suggested that we might not see unemployment in the state drop below 8% for another maybe year, perhaps.
That's correct. I think the rationale is that we become a more productive society. We get more produce and product out of our work hour, and so that continues to make unemployment high. We also have more people being a little bit positive, thinking they're coming back into the workforce, looking for a job.
Greg Porter, your takeaway from this week's developments, and most notably the forecast.
Well, I think as we continue to have this conversation, look at the forecast, we're cautiously optimistic about where we're going. I think if we look at the unemployment, it did tick up a little bit. If you look at the numbers of the sales tax revenue, that's a real indicator. But I think one thing that we need to really look at is what's happened on Wall Street. That Wall Street has been bustling for the last 3 or 4 months, and are those real indicators on what's going to happen in the future? So, you know, we're good in regards to that, but we have to really be very optimistic, cautious about what is going to happen in the future.
Luke Kenley, you've done this before. You said this week, you know, now the real session begins,
That's right.
The interesting time, kind of everything crammed into 1 week. I get the sense you already know you've looked ahead in the script and you know the final page. You know where we're going with this, right? Or how much of this is just the drama that has to play out in the final week?
See, I don't know if I want to betray your confidence or...
I didn't write the script.
I think the difference that we have this year from the last few times is this is actually an opportunity budget, because even though the revenue forecast wasn't totally blooming with the great news, it was better news. And in the last 5 years or so, we've really fought hard to maintain our fiscal integrity here in the state of Indiana, to not have to raise any taxes of any kind. And we've done a great job of that, but that's required people to tighten their belts. And so now we have an opportunity not only to take care of some problems that maybe are lingering because we couldn't deal with them before, but to plan a budget for 2 years and really project out where Indiana wants to go.
Of course, $290 million is sort of the new cushion, but what would have been the, and I don't want to play too much of a hypothetical, mm-hmm. but would $1 billion have prompted you to say, okay, you know, happy days are here again, let's get tax cuts, let's do everything? Where does your caution turn into, you know, just
optimism.
Out and out
well,
optimism?
Well, I think the first thing I'd say is never, revenue forecast is just a static shot in time. So you never want to put all your
eggs.
That's
what they always say about political polls, right?
Yeah, and you have to look at bigger pictures than that. And so we're glad to get some good news. If we'd gotten great news, I think maybe that might have pushed the needle a little bit more from where we are. But I think budget people are generally cautious that they want to keep that AAA bond rating. They want to keep your debts down, and they don't want to be raising taxes and they don't want to, on the other side of the coin, lower taxes so far that you can't run government the way you need to.
Karen Tallien, you and some of your colleagues in the Democratic caucus in the Senate, I know, offered up a number of amendments, for instance, on second reading,
just a few.
That in many cases would have said, let's use some of that money to invest in the workforce or any number of issues, expansion of Medicaid and so forth, and nothing prevailed. Again, it's there are supermajorities, of course, in both Republican supermajorities in both chambers. Do you feel like you're being heard? Are you a part of this process, and I want to put this as nicely as I could. Could you guys go home and we just have this discussion with this side of the room? I mean, how do you feel about this?
I have been in the minority since I've been in the Senate. So this is year number 8 for me. People like Vice Simpson, you know, were in the minority for almost 30 years. We understand that even though we don't always get everything that we want, sometimes we get some of what we want, but I think we have another role. I have in my car a little statue of Don Quixote, and it sits on my dashboard, and people laugh at that, but they say, well, you know, that's your job. We have to be out there keeping the supermajority on their toes and say, hey, there's another side to what some of you guys are doing. And I think we brought out some of that yesterday when we started talking about the sort of prolific expansion of the voucher program. We were saying, hey, we're the ones standing on the side saying, there are some problems here. So I think that's our job.
Right. Tilting at windmills, I guess.
So that's where that windmill idea came from.
It wasn't one of the energy bills, I think. Do you care what they...
Certainly.
Again, I'm trying to be nice about this, but do you really care what your Democratic counterparts say? You have super majorities. They could walk, they could leave the state, and you can get the job done.
Certainly we care. I think one of the issues is it would be very easy to say, you know, this is the way it's going to be, but then that wouldn't be good government, and the state of Indiana would suffer under that. There are a lot of good ideas. 150 people have good ideas in the General Assembly. And I think a lot of the things that I have heard over the session, I can see a couple bills that have changed. I think the Senate Bill 1 changed in the House because of conversations we had, which made people in the House Republican caucus feel a little uncomfortable with it. We had some issues related to medical records related to the mentally ill change because of Democrat continued to bring up the issue, and it was actually changed on the House floor because of interest. And one of the things I think I have heard over and over from Representative Porter and Representative Pryor is we need to continue to look at minority scholarship. The education gap needs to close. It does need to close because one of the opportunities for the future in this opportunity budget, you know, is to have an educated workforce.
Right.
And I want to get into the substance. One more procedural question, maybe one more to set the stage. You know, we do have super majorities in both chambers, kind of a new thing. But also, it strikes me that we have some new faces as part of the fiscal policy team. As I look around, not new faces necessarily to the legislature or to the State House, but in your role, new face.
Old face.
Seasoned face. You know, we had the two senior members, you know, on Ways and Means, and they'd sort of swapped the chairmanship back and forth, it seemed, for years with changes in party leadership. And majority control would either be Bill Crawford or Jeff Espick. They retired, 80 years combined legislative experience. How the rookies doing? I'm pointing to this guy.
Well,
Is it changing? I guess it's not as flippant a question as it might seem. Do the personalities change this process?
Well, I think it does change because we're all in, different individuals. Chairman Brown and I have had a meaningful conversation on it over the last 4 weeks or so. And I think as we move forward, I think it's going to tell what we do in the next 7 to 10 days.
Yeah.
I think that Representative Brown knows our concerns about education, and Senator talks about, you know, optimistic and everything's like that. So I think as we move forward, we're going to continue to look at our Democratic agenda, the creating jobs for the middle class, look at affordable health care and things like that. So, you know, that is very important to the 6.3 million people that lie within our state. And we're going to be the conscience. And we may not all agree, but we're going to try to continue to resonate our thought processes and help us try to blend something that's meaningful for everyone. And I think at this point, I don't think we will walk away. I think they will ingest and digest what we have because they do have a supermajority, and we're under pressure to do what we need to do, but they're under pressure too.
You get the reality, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, John, I think on that point, being in a supermajority, I think it makes it us even more sensitive to the fact that we need to govern in ways that we listen to all people, because if you have a supermajority and you just hammer your will on the rest of the body, I don't think the Hoosier public expects that out of all of us. They expect all of us to come to the table with honest, brokered ideas. And if you can, for the minority, if they can avoid, you might say, demonizing or politicizing something, then they're really doing their job to help us get there. And we're pretty sensitive that we don't want to be one single-mindedness in our thinking about what's the right answer.
They don't want us to be like Washington. Everyone said,
Good point.
Well, be Hoosiers. Yeah.
And another thing that happens, as I happen to have seen in places like Lake County, Indiana, when you have one-party rule for a long time, the party itself starts to fight with each other So you may have super majorities, but I'll bet you that in both of those caucuses, you don't have all their members on the same page.
Well, I guess the obvious manifestation of that, and this is stating the obvious, is you had a House budget, which is different with Republican control, different from the Senate budget with Republican control.
Right.
And both of those are perhaps maybe more similar in many ways than what the governor, another Republican, had put mm-hmm. forth. There's a lot of love and I feeling in the room here. I
great
guess,
day.
I tell you, if I walked out and we just maybe left you guys alone, maybe a camera running just to kind of record it for history's sake, I mean, could you get this done in 25 minutes? That's about our discussion here. I mean, how close is this?
You know, when you look at all three of the proposals, the governor's and the House and the Senate, there's anywhere between just $80 and $160 million difference, and I think we can get it done very quickly. And hopefully, you know, those are the things we need to decide on, some of the sticky issues. You know, K through 12 education is our number one priority. With revenue forecasts, I think there's extra pressure on how that's distributed. Higher education, we have a framework, and some of that is the performance funding. I think some of the other issues we're going to get mired down with, again, the voucher issues basically between kind of the House and the Senate right now and in the difference of philosophy. But the gaming issues and the gaming issues and how they interrelate with the horsemen are things that probably we have to spend the most time on.
You just touched on everything on my list. We're going to spend the rest of the time talking about those very things. Now, when it comes, Greg Porter, to education, K through 12 support, for instance, the plans that these gentlemen across the carpet here from you, I think my sense is you would like their funding proposals a lot better than what came out of the governor's office.
Oh, absolutely. I think their proposals of 1% and 2%. But we have to look at that. You know, we got to remember, we took a $300 million hit early on about 2 or 3 years ago. And so we're starting in the basis that we're funding education more than we ever funded. Yes, you might be funding it more than ever, but we took a $300 million hit, so we're already down. Then we're going to build on what you had, you know, a couple of years ago. That's not really increased from our perspective. And also, when you look at that from our perspective, you look at the 1% and 2%, you know, 30, 40% of the school corporations don't do well in urban and rural Indiana. So we're very concerned about the part of funding public education, because that's Article 8, Section 1 says we must fund public education.
Well, in education, certainly the House and Senate budgets, again, compared with the governor's, are more generous in that regard. Same with roads and transportation.
Right.
Those
mm-hmm.
seem to be the two biggies. Luke Kinley, is that, you know, I guess negotiation starts with identifying the common ground. And so we know basically it sounds as if we're going to have more money for schools,
That's
more
right.
money for roads right. and transportation, right. Maybe a $500 million in tax cuts of some type.
Right.
The question, of course, becomes what type? Is that a fair assessment so far? Where have I gone astray?
You're good on the major issues, and as the old canard is, the devil's in the details and kind of getting there. When I say this is an opportunity, I'm phrasing it that way because I think we need to be careful to make sure that we identify our priorities and fund them in the correct way now and plan for the future. And Representative Brown, one of the things that he did was he paid for $200 million of capital projects in cash right now so that we wouldn't be pushing our debt structure up.
Which is quite different from what
that's right
and the
Senate followed suit, and we did some of the same kinds of things on some other things. Now we may be surprised when we sit down with each other and say, well, gee, I like my thing so much better, I don't really want to give that up. So we're not done yet, and there's a lot of input to be had,
but we're not going to see that 10% cut perhaps that the governor wants. It'll be more the blend of corporate financial institutions, inheritance tax, all of which were sort of most of which were already on a phase-out schedule. It maybe would just tighten
well,
up.
And one of the things we feel strongly about in inheritance tax, we can get rid of a whole division of the Department of Revenue. Think about the additive
effect.
I thought
this was the job session.
Well, it will be jobs for Hoosiers, not for government, hopefully long-term. But getting rid of a part of regulation, so it's the added effect of money back to families, but also the added effect of decreasing regulation and administrative burden.
Go ahead.
And I was going to say, I think we have to be very careful when we look at that bump up in the revenue forecast, because just taking out the inheritance tax this year uses up that whole surplus that we saw yesterday. Mm-hmm. the one thing that we have to remember is that the revenue forecast that's done does not include any of the legislation that's on the table right now. So they're going to have to come back in December and say, oh, yeah, by the way, that inheritance tax law that we passed, or this law, or 1006 or 1003, all those things have a fiscal, and now we have to add those back into the forecast. And we may not see that number if we spend it all right now.
And we talk. Oh, go ahead.
Well, John, I'm not sure. I mean, I agree with some of the things that Karen has said here, but back
that's
to,
always true, Luke.
back to your earlier point, and I'm speaking for myself only here. I think the $500 million in tax cuts has been put together in the legislature in ways that encourage touches almost everybody in the state, and encourages the private economy to be able to develop jobs because they have that money back. But I don't think we can go much beyond that and maintain, for example, our AAA bond rating and things like that. So I think we're going to have to choose either this or that. I don't think we're in a position where we say, let's just keep doing more.
We talked about two of the wild cards, if you will, not your term, but that was the suggestion, the casino, trying to bolster casinos against new out-of-state competition, which, of course, is not a budget issue, but it's a money issue, which means that everything's a budget issue, right? And then the other one is, under the Affordable Care Act, you know, the notion of, do we expand Medicaid to involve more Hoosiers? I guess there's some money in your budgets for that, even though the governor says he'll only expand it under the Healthy Indiana Plan. I mean, where is it? Are we going to see something that causes us to our jaws to drop in the next week on either of those two fronts, casino legislation or Medicaid?
Well, I think Medicaid, it's been the House Republicans' philosophy. Let's let the governor do what he's elected to do, to govern and be the leader and negotiate. We have a law on the books that gives him broad latitude to negotiate the HIP plan. And we all feel we want some consumer principles in any coverage of the uninsured. So let's let the governor do his job. We have the opportunity to come back in November if there's enabling legislation, and or next session if we need to make something conform to what the governor has negotiated with the federal government. And I think lastly, one of the things is we're really concerned because there's a moving target at the federal level. Some of the things that we were worried about, whether DISH money would go away, that's been delayed till 2015. We know that the small business tax credit at the federal level's been delayed till 2015. So there's a lot of moving targets in this health care reform.
We're almost out of time. So
The overarching issue there is we spent $6.5 billion on that in 2012. That equals our school funding formula, the largest item in the budget. In 15, we're going to spend over $9 billion, and by 18 or 19, Indiana is going to be spending state and federal money together $13.5 billion for one program, which will be just a little less than our whole budget. So this thing is going to impact for a long time all of our other decisions.
You know, we are out of time, but all right, let me say it for you. You're concerned about Medicaid, and you want to prop up the casino industry. Is this fair for both of you on this? I don't want to... everybody's silent.
I'm concerned about Medicaid, but it's really fluid. I don't want to drown.
All right. We'll have to leave it there, unfortunately. Obviously, you guys have more hours to work on this than we do, but we got to start at least, right? I thank you for being here. My guests have been Republican Representative Tim Brown of Crawfordsville, Democratic Representative Greg Porter of Indianapolis, Republican Senator Luke Kenley of Noblesville, and Democratic Senator Karen Tallien of Portage. General Assembly is winding down. The four caucus leaders return to tell us which bills passed, which ones didn't, and why, on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight. Ed, heard the roundtable. Make sense of it for us. Where do we end up on April 29th, if in fact that's the end date?
Well, the good thing is that everybody's talking, and everybody's in good humor, and it's a lot different than we've seen with some of the tensions in the past that have not worked out well. I think that Tim Brown, Representative Brown, the chair of the Ways and Means Committee, put it best when he said, you know, this is not going to be a difficult budget to put together. Everybody seems to be on the same page, on the same calculator. There's not a lot of difference both in the policy end of the budget and in the numbers, and that's going to come together quickly. I think some of the other bills that are still out there are going to be a little bit more difficult to resolve. The education bills, particularly, as he referred to, the ones with the voucher expansion, the Common Core Standards Bill, which is a big philosophical matter of debate between some different factions, the Indianapolis City Government Reorganization Bill, the Gaming Bill, of course, which seems to have no real sweet spot that everybody can look to. And there are a couple of others out there. We did a full show basically about the Indiana gasification plant down in Rockport, and that's becoming more and more difficult to kind of get everybody's arms around in the same way. And none of these things are really partisan except maybe the Indianapolis government issue. But everybody's working together. There just may not be an easy way to come up with compromise on some of these measures.
Do those shape or steer or show up in the budget ultimately? Some of those, particularly casino and some of the Medicaid expansion issues, those are money issues as we talked about during the roundtable.
Well, the short answer is yes. Yeah, the budget's always a refuge for a lot of things that don't find their way in something else. But there are some policy things that could end up in the budget, and certainly some of the gaming issues, especially as they relate to the tax deductions and tax credits that have been bandied about.
There's going to be a whole lot for you to chew on in your newsletters. If you're not a subscriber, you better hurry up and get a subscription to Legislative Insight. Ed, thanks as always for your insight.
For more information, episode streams, and extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwannis, and on behalf of WFYI Public Media, Indiana's other public broadcasting stations, and the statehousefile.com, I thank you for tuning in and invite you to join us again next week at the same time. Until then, take care.
The idea economy is here at the Purdue Research Park. A powerful economic engine and a technology conduit from Chicago to Louisville. Purdue Research Park, the idea economy is here.